Hello and a very warm welcome to this bonus episode of the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and as a disclosure, this episode is hosted by EMG Health and is sponsored by an educational grant from Thermo Fisher, in which the views and discussion might not represent the position or endorsement of either. For this episode, we'll be talking about genomic microarray utility in the age of next-generation sequencing. We'll also be touching on why microarrays are recommended over newer molecular technologies and when microarrays are the preferred choice for genetic testing. To help me dive into this subject is a specialist from across the pond in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm joined by Shashi Shetty, an associate professor of pathology at the School of Medicine and associate program director at the Laboratory of Genetics and Genomic Fellowship Program at Case Western Reserve University. It's a fine institution which I've had the pleasure of visiting. The good professor has been involved in genetics education in the Middle East and Asia and is passionate about delivering genetic education to developing countries to improve patient accessibility to genetic services. Professor Shetty is also the director of the Cytogenetics Laboratory in the Center for Human Genetics at University Hospitals Cleveland Medical Center, Cleveland, Ohio, again back in the United States. And she's authored or co-authored more than 100 papers and book chapters in the field of genetics. So, welcome to the podcast, Professor Shetty.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity.
Can you introduce yourself and tell us what you do in your day-to-day professional life and what tools you use?
I've been working in this field for almost like since the mid-90s when I started my PhD, and then I've moved on and specialized in cytogenetics, and recently I got board certified in molecular genetics as well. So I run a cytogenetics lab, and in a cytogenetics lab, the bread and butter is chromosome analysis. So when you talk about chromosome analysis, you're looking at the entire genome. And if you want to look at the chromosomes, what you need is live cells that are dividing. Because if they are dividing, you can capture them in the cell cycle. And metaphase is the phase that we want these chromosomes to be captured. So once we have that, so in a routine cytogenetics lab, we grow these cells, we capture chromosomes, we analyze those from different cell types, like amniotic fluids or chorionic villi, if you want to study the fetal DNA or fetal chromosomes rather, or in the newborns or pediatric population, you're thinking that is some kind of genetic condition going on, and maybe it is chromosomal. That's when chromosomes are important. And when it comes to adult life, patients, people who present with either miscarriages or infertility, chromosomes tell you a lot. If they have balanced translocations, then during meiosis, there could be malsegregation happening, and that could result in abnormal offsprings. So that is in a nutshell. We need live cells. We look at chromosomes. And once we have the chromosomes all lined up, what I do is my role is to interpret what that means for the patient, or how should the clinician go about counseling these patients, what are the recurrence risks. So that's the basis of a cytogenetics lab. It's a very mature field. It's been there forever now. Something that has happened in the last 20 years is we have FISH now, which is more of a molecular, but a cytogenetics interpretation method. And moving on, chromosomal microarrays, CMA has taken over. So It's been an extraordinary explosion in the last decade or so, and we are doing great work in terms of cytogenetics and what it means for the patient care.
So you've told us, Shashi, that your work, and you know, it's amazing. I think back to the start of my medical career, this stuff just was not available. Your work is looking at before life, looking at amniotic fluid for chromosomal defects in the unborn baby. You're looking at newborns, you're looking at the pediatric population, you're looking at adults with, for instance, malignancy, and looking for chromosomal abnormalities that may be relevant to the treatment of that condition or for the families. And then you're liaising with a whole range of clinicians and educating them about exactly what you can do. Is that a fair description?
Yes, it is a fair description.
Excellent. So you did mention, I'm terrible with acronyms, and I was always taught acronyms can stand for multiple things. So, for instance, you mentioned FISH, which is, I believe, Fluorescence In Situ Hybridization. It's a great acronym. So that takes me on to an important topic. Can we make sure we're on the same page with all the terms? For instance, next generation sequencing or next gen sequencing or NGS, that can be a whole range of flavors. Can you address that?
Definitely. So when people talk about NGS, it's like it's next generation sequencing. So basically you're sequencing, you can sequence the whole genome. So that's known as the whole genome sequencing or WGS. But you can also have targeted sequencing. So you're just looking at genes of interest. So you're just looking at the exons. You're not looking at the introns. When we talk about whole genome, you're looking at both introns and exons. Whereas when you're talking about an exome, you're looking at the exons. And then there are different types where you're just looking at hotspots. So you know that in a particular condition, a specific variant or mutation is present or few mutations are present. And if you're suspicious of that condition, then you just go in and just look for those. Those are called as hotspots. So when people try to say NGS loosely, it's not always clear what they are talking about. So when we compare, like if we say we are comparing two technologies, it's important to say, okay, it's NGS, but what is that you're interested in?
Makes perfect sense. So again, as we're looking at these different technologies, could you briefly describe chromosomal microarray and why single nucleotide polymorphism or SNP microarrays are invaluable tools? I have to say, I've always loved the term SNP. It's form following function. It says what it is. So yes, can you please address that?
So before I start with the CMA and SNPs, let's go back to chromosomes. When we talk about chromosomes, we are looking for trisomies, monosomies, balanced translocations, and you're looking at the whole genome. But the resolution, so what you're looking for sometimes, if it's a large change in millions of base pairs, like say 5 to 10 megabases, you're able to see on a chromosome. Whereas with more refined and sophisticated technology like fluorescent in situ hybridization, you can look for smaller change in few kilobases. What CMA has done, that is chromosomal microarray, what it has done is it's combined chromosomes and FISH. So chromosomes is whole genome, non-targeted, and FISH is a targeted technology. You have to know what you're looking for. So it combined the two and gave us a better resolution. So now you can look for deletions and duplications or monosomies and trisomies, but at a ones that are very small in size, which was not possible with chromosomes. So that was awesome. That was great. We moved from something that gave us like in millions of pairs changes to few kilobases. What chromosomes did not do is tell us if there are two chromosomes present, are they coming from both parents or are they coming from one parent? So that's called as uniparental disomy. And for that, if you want to evaluate that portion, chromosomal microarray with SNP markers, that is useful. So we all have polymorphisms in our genome. So this one base pair change information, but with many, many SNP markers, now it's possible to say if a stretch of DNA is identical or is it different. So this is where we made a huge leap from doing regular copy number to allelic to detecting allelic imbalances.
So Sheshi, some may view chromosomal microarray or CMA as an old technology, and you've done a nice job explaining next-gen sequencing, but CMA versus next-gen sequencing, why is CMA particularly useful in your application? And maybe you'll tell us where you use which.
Definitely. I hear this all the time that technology is going to take over. And I keep telling my trainees, you know, technologies are built by companies. You know, they are invested in it. They do a great job. But when the technology comes to us, we don't do anything with the technology. We use it to take care of our patients. And when I say that, what I mean is we generate this data, but what does that data mean? That's where our role is, like interpretation. And that's what people forget, that just because the technology has changed doesn't mean something that is mature is just going to disappear. So if you think about CMA, what it has done is when we used to use just chromosome as the first tier test for, say, somebody presenting with developmental delay or intellectual disabilities, we used to find large changes, like, you know, big megabases of changes. Whereas with CMA, what happened was once CMA was introduced, chromosomal microarray was introduced just with the non-polymorphic markers, our positive rate went from, say, 10% to 20-25%. So that's a huge leap. And we are talking about microdeletions and microduplications. These are large structural changes. And if you think about trying to figure this out using a PCR-based testing, one could have allele dropout. So this is very technical. So when you do PCR, if you have large deletions, it might not amplify. So that is the advantage when you're using CMA. We are talking about these microdeletions and duplications that makes a diagnosis and it stops that diagnostic odyssey. So if a patient came to you, you really want to start with CMA as your baseline study. So it's basically replaced karyotype, but with a better, higher resolution test. So you run this assay at the get-go, you know that, okay, this patient doesn't have a microdeletion or a microduplication. So we have excluded that. So now the next step is what could be the next step? What's on the differential? So you start with the basic overall whole genome quick assay that gives you two pieces of information, copy number changes, so gains and losses, and also if there is any allelic imbalance. So when I say allelic imbalance, it's important because it tells you if there is consanguinity in the family, could there be a risk for autosomal recessive condition? So that's where it stands. And it's a simple, easy assay. I would say that we are not spending a lot of resources on bioinformatics and having a big team of people. Unlike with NGS, it tends to be very human resources heavy. Versus CMA, doesn't matter which part of the world you are in, it's a nice, easy, well-established, mature technology.
So it's interesting that you talked about people saying, oh, one technology replacing the next. In the media world, when television came out, people said that's the end of radio. And when radio came out, they'd said that's the end of the theater. And then movies were going to replace radio and TV. And of course, that doesn't happen. Technology builds one on another, and we find the right role for each in each given situation. And you've already told us that you work in a range of clinical scenarios. So let's ask you, where does a chromosomal microarray win over karyotyping? FISH, I love that, FISH, fluorescence in situ hybridization, or multiplex ligation dependent probe amplification? Where does each fit into the puzzle?
So one of the greatest advantage of using CMA is the resolution. You're able to detect small changes that was not possible with chromosomes. And then with FISH, the disadvantage is if you're going to run FISH, you have to know what you're looking for. So if you are, as a physician, if you send me a requisition and you say run FISH, I don't know what I should be doing because are you thinking Prader-Willi Angelman? Are you thinking DeGeorge? I don't know. Whereas if you say, I want CMA, you check that requisition, your order, I know exactly that it's one test. It's like chromosomes. I'll just run it. I don't have to have any preconceived notion when I'm doing CMA versus with FISH. I need to know what you want. So that is the disadvantage of FISH. In terms of karyotype, I can tell you, like, if you're thinking about any imbalances like a gain or a loss, CMA is a better test. Of course, one of the disadvantages with CMA that I would like to put out there is it does not detect balanced rearrangements. However, these balanced rearrangements are important in the context of miscarriages or infertility. So not so much in the developmental world, like, you know, in the pediatric population, it's fine because you're really looking for an imbalance and the patient has a phenotype. Whereas when you're talking about balance rearrangement, these are typically seen in adult patients, but they present with infertility or miscarriages. They themselves are not affected. But during meiosis, they could have malsegregation and that could result in abnormal offsprings. So that is the major difference.
So I don't want to harp on the topic, but I want to make sure that in my mind, I've got very clear the key advantages of chromosomal microarray over next-gen sequencing, whatever that exactly may mean, as you so eloquently described. Can you give us that?
I'm a cytogeneticist and a molecular geneticist by training, so I don't have biases towards any technologies. I'm very open to using any kind of technologies. So I'm open to use CMA versus NGS. But I'll tell you, in the big scheme of things, if you're thinking about CMA, the ease of performing the assay and the bioinformatics tools that are available, they're very mature. They're very well established. So any lab in the world, anywhere in the world, once you buy this equipment like the CMA platform, you have the DNA, you should be able to easily train your people and get this test going. So I would say that's definitely ease of performing the assay. Unlike chromosomal analysis, it requires a lot of technical expertise. And then in terms of whole genome analysis, you get two pieces of information, copy number and allelic imbalances. This is important because in one go, you get this huge amount of information, but it also helps you to narrow down what to do next with this patient. And I've already mentioned that CMA has like two types of probes. So this is very technical. This is for the laboratories. When you have two types of probes overlapping each other, so if you find, say, a copy number change, you have SNP markers also on that track, it will tell you, yes, this is real. The copy number you're seeing, it is real. So the SNP marker will validate that. Before, when we had CMA just with the non-polymorphic markers, just one type of markers, we had to, anytime we saw a change, we had to go and confirm it either by FISH or some other molecular methods. Now with these two types of probe overlapping, we don't have to do that confirmation. So that is cost saving. And this is something I like to highlight to the laboratories, why they should get into this technology, because it helps them even in the lab to be more efficient. Beyond that, I would say one of the important things, like I emphasize, it's not just technology, but it is the interpretation part. We have had CMA since the mid-2000, and we have so much experience in this field. We have, as a professional society, whether it's in the United States, North America, or Europe, or Asia, we have developed good guidelines. And there are a lot of clinical experts around the world. So if you're stuck with something, there is always someone you could fall back on. These interpretations are not easy. When you're dealing with whole genome, our understanding is still evolving, even though we've come a long way. So I think it's nice to have that background, the strong resource. And that I would say is an advantage when it comes to CMA. We have a very robust group of people around the world.
Can you describe an example, Shashi, where chromosomal microarray made all the difference? Or can you give an example, or some examples, where chromosomal microarray demonstrated that it was invaluable?
Actually, there are a lot of examples. Like, you know, our clinicians who ordered these tests, when I call them and I tell them, were you suspicious of this? They're like, oh, no, I did not know this was coming, kind of. So there are a lot of examples, but there is one example that stands out. We had a newborn that passed away just right after birth, and all they could collect is blood specimen, which was non-viable. So they had no idea what was going on with the newborn. It passed away. All I got in my lab was blood that was non-viable. So like I mentioned earlier, we need live cells for chromosome analysis. So I couldn't do chromosome analysis. But what we could do is, like we said, okay, let's just extract the DNA. We extracted the DNA and we ran CMA, or chromosomal microarray, which has both polymorphic and SNP non-polymorphic and SNP markers. we ran the assay, and what I see is deletion on 7q11 that is consistent with diagnosis of Williams syndrome. So I called the physician. I said, were you suspicious? Did you think this could be Williams? Like, remember, this is a newborn. You're not thinking Williams, okay? So like the phenotype has not developed. You're not looking at, like, you know, you're thinking, oh, this child is socially very, very outgoing or something. Like, you know, you see all these features. No, we are talking about a newborn that just passed away. And she's like, no, I did not think about Williams. The only thing prenatally we saw was IUGR, which is seen with Williams cases. So what was interesting was it came as a surprise, like it came out of nowhere for the physician. But what for the family, it's important. Majority of the Williams syndrome cases are de novo. So they are new mutations. They just happen in the during conception. So it's not like it's inherited from a parent. But with Williams syndrome, one thing to keep in mind is sometimes it can be inherited. Very rare that a parent has a deletion and it is passed on. So 50% risk. Beyond that, in our human population, we have this polymorphic inversion on chromosome 7 that could predispose someone to have a 7q deletion or a duplication. So deletion would result in Williams syndrome. It's important to know because about 25% of the time, a transmitting parent could carry that polymorphic inversion. They themselves are normal. So in this context, it was very important to have this diagnosis because for their future pregnancies, it was important that they got a test. They got tested as well during prenatal diagnosis. They have to go for, like, it's highly recommended that they test the fetus so they know if Williams syndrome is a possibility.
Very cogent and very, well, frankly, very moving situation. You know, we've always got to remember that there are human beings at the end of the laboratory analysis living complex lives. So we've hinted at this, that technologies, that there's a sequence of technologies, if you'll forgive the pun, and that they can work together. So I think I know the answer to this. Do you foresee chromosomal microarray data and next-gen sequencing data being used together to increase diagnostic yields in the future?
I do. I do think it's good. It's already happening. And we are seeing that the yield or the positive rate is much higher when the two technologies come together, at least in the hematological world. And we know that these two technologies target different types of mutations or changes in the genome. So when you put together, it is an additive effect. For sure, it's going to happen. When it happens, it will all depend on the institutes, what kind of resources one has. And I'm seeing that already happening. So,
and sort of as we move towards the end, overall, what's the future of chromosomal microarray in this age of next generation sequencing?
Thank you for that question, because I'm a cytogeneticist and I've been asked about if chromosome has a place in our genome world. And this has been going on, like cytogenetics is a dead field kind of thing for a long time, but we are still here. Chromosomes is still here. Chromosome has its role. I like your analogy of television and radio and how technology evolves. Same thing here. Chromosome has its place. Similarly, CMA has made a very, very strong place for itself in the genome world, and it's not going anywhere. Because of the maturity of the technology, the interpretation surrounding it, and what it can do for patient diagnosis. So it's definitely here to stay, and it's going to help NGS. And overall, it's good for the patients.
Well, and being good for the patients, that's the key thing. As I said before, let's always put people who are dealing with health issues at the center, whether it's in a research setting or it's in clinical practice. So as we move to a close, Shashi, I always like to ask people, if you had the opportunity to wish for two or three things to improve human health, whether in your sphere of specialty or more generally, what would those things be?
I'm very passionate about education, and I've seen it firsthand coming from like a developing country and now in a very advanced country, I've seen the difference in the access to care. So I feel, because I'm a geneticist, I feel access to genetic education is important. I've noticed many, many parts of the world, whether they are developing or developed, there is access to technology now. But when it comes to understanding what it means, the interpretation aspect of it, that still lacks. So one thing I would like to do is create a strong network for genetic education so it can help different specialties throughout the world. So it's like almost like Doctors Without Borders. So Genetics Without Borders. I would love to see that, at least during my lifetime. And I'm hoping that the expenses comes down so much that doesn't matter which part of the world you are in, you should have access to care and you're able to afford it. You're able to afford this technology. You have the education to support it and understand the interpretation so you can improve patient care.
Professor Shetty, thank you so much. I've certainly learned a lot from this discussion on genomic microarray utility in this age of next generation sequencing and why single nucleotide polymorphism microarrays are so valuable in this field. Shashi, I want to thank you for all the work you do to increase our knowledge of this field and the impact it has for patients, and also to thank you for taking the time to come onto the podcast today to share your knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, folks, that's it for today's episode. I hope you found this discussion of interest and to be some value for you. Please take care and come back next week for another episode of the EMG Health Podcast. Until then, stay safe, stay well, stay curious. Bye for now.